If you want help with your nutrition and you want help with your training and climbing, we have a new program coming out August 8th, and it's just that. It's nutrition plus climbing and training, and it's hosted by me and also Coach Alex Steiger. You'll get a training program from Alex, you'll get a nutrition program from me, and you'll get one-on-one time with both of us in order to cater everything to your situation, your needs, and everything. If you want to sign up for the waitlist for that, you can go to trainingbeta.com/reach. The program is called Reach. It's 4 weeks, starts August 8th. We hope to see you in there. If you sign up for the waitlist, you'll get a $50 discount on the price of the program. So again, trainingbeta.com/reach. This is the Training Beta Podcast, and I'm your host, Neely Quinn. Thanks for joining me for another episode, and this one I'm really excited about. I have so much to say about this woman that I interviewed, and that is Allison Vest. And Allison Vest is a professional climber who lives in Salt Lake City, but she used to live in Canada, and she competed quite a bit for Canada, or as a Canadian, and she had a lot of success there, winning the Canadian Bouldering Nationals in 2018 and 2020, and then she won the Canadian Lead Nationals in 2019. Then in 2019, she became the first female Canadian climber to send V13. She did the Terminator in Squamish. And then this February 2022, she became the first female Canadian climber to send V14 when she did Show Your Scars in Ogden, Utah. So that is because she decided to take a break from comp climbing and focus on outdoor climbing, which she's going to tell you all about. But that's kind of what I wanted to talk to her about, was her transition from comp climbing training to training for outdoors, and then also the mindset shifts that needed to happen. So we talk all about that. We talk about her training and how it's different now and how she got to be as strong as she is. She was recently tested by Tyler Nelson, who's been on the show a ton of times, and he's at C4HP. And you can find his remarks about the testing he did on her, because he found that she was actually the strongest person, male or female, that he had ever tested on a bar, like pulling down on a bar. She cumulatively with both arms pulled down like over 750 pounds, which is crazy. And her finger strength is also completely off the charts. So definitely check that out. I put a link to all of that in the show notes. So she's really strong, and I wanted to talk to her about that and how she feels about that. But also, she's recently come out talking about some body image insecurities on Instagram. And I think that I always think it's so brave when people come out and talk about that stuff. And so I wanted to talk to her about that and any responses that she's gotten from her audience on Instagram about that. And so we ended up talking about eating disorders among competition climbers, and it was a really interesting conversation. So I'm a huge fan of hers, and I really hope that you enjoy this interview as much as I did. And I just want to say thank you again, Allison, for being on my show. Enjoy, and I'll talk to you on the other side. Welcome to the show, Allison. Thanks very much for talking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So for anybody who doesn't know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name's Allison Vest. I'm 26 years old. I currently live in Salt Lake City, Utah, but I grew up in Canada and grew up in the competition world competing up there. So my sport identity is sort of as a Canadian, but I'm living in the US right now.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of did a little bit of research. I definitely stalked you, just for the record. And you have dual citizenship, is that right?
I do have dual citizenship. So I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. And then my dad got kind of his dream job working as a animal conservationist in Canmore, Alberta, so right in the Rockies. It was sort of his dream job, dream location. So our whole family took a chance and moved up there, and it was only going to be for a year or so or something, and they're still there and haven't left. And so yeah, we moved up there when I was 7 and then just slowly became Canadian over the years, living there, permanent residency, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like I feel more Canadian. I've spent most of my life there and sort of developing years, but yeah, I'm a dual citizen and all of my extended family is American. So
yeah,
a little bit of both.
Okay. Got it. So then, but you just moved to Salt Lake like a couple years ago. When was that?
Yeah, almost exactly 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years in July. One of my best friends, Kyra Condi, was training for the Olympics in the middle of, you know, the thick of the pandemic, and sort of hard to maintain psych and be training just sort of all by yourself in the gym when you're not really supposed to be seeing other people. So one of the goals of me for moving down here was to be with her and support her and train with her while she was prepping for the Olympics, and it, you know, served me well too. But I was only going to be here for, you know, 3 to 6 months, and it's been almost 2 years. So,
well, you must not hate it.
No, it's pretty great, I have to say.
Well, I mean, do you want to go back to Canada?
I don't feel like I have any extreme attachment either way. You know, I think I enjoy living where makes the most sense for me, for what I'm doing in my life. And I've lived in a bunch of different places now. And yeah, I don't know. I think there's definitely pros and cons of each, but I'm not like dying to get back there, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you said you want to live wherever it makes most sense for what you're doing with your life. So tell me more about what you are doing in your life right now.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of I took a step back this past year from competing, which I haven't done, I think, since I was 10 or 11. But so that was a bit of a big deal, big shift. And I decided to focus more on rock climbing and pull away from the plastic a little bit. And I think it just went way better than I was expecting. I think I'm better at it climbing outside. I didn't really expect that than I was ever at competing. You know, competing is such a mental game, and the requirement is that you're able to push through and be really sharp and on it on whatever day is required. You don't really get to choose. You just have to show up and be the best version of yourself on one specific day, which was always hard for me. I think that was always something that was really holding me back in competitions. And, you know, with projecting or finding hard boulders or routes outside, it's a lot easier to give yourself a little bit more grace. And, you know, if it's not the day, it's not the day. And you can throw a tantrum and let yourself spiral, and you can come back another day and the boulder will still be there. Whereas in comps, it's the demand mentally is hard for sure. So it was nice for me to take a step back and go in a different direction. This month I competed again for the first time in almost a year in Vail at the North American Cup there. And it was nice to come back to it with sort of a fresher mind and less expectations and to just have fun being back in that scene again. But
did you compete? I saw that on your Instagram, that you had competed. Did you compete with the intention of continuing to compete, or was that just like sort of a one-time thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll keep following the Stoke wherever that goes. You know, there's a bunch of pretty cool, more like pro series comps that aren't necessarily World Cups, but you know, there's the Ben Summer Comp. There's this event called Jackalope in Montreal that are really fun, and the level's really high, and it's sort of just a good way to get back in, and it'll be good. I think a good measure for me to do some of those this summer and in August, and try to figure out if that's something I want to dive back into, or if I just want to keep sort of dabbling in it when it makes sense. But the North American Cup Series thing is really nice, especially as a Canadian athlete. We get national team points for doing well at those events. So it's also just keeping my foot in the door in terms of qualifying for the national team. We get just as many, if not more, points from those events than we do from our actual national championships. So, yeah, so I guess it's sort of twofold. One is just trying to enjoy it more and dabbling back in the sport, but two is in a more logical sense and points wise is keeping my foot in the door on the national team.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. You're kind of doing the bare minimum when the feeling strikes you.
Totally.
Yeah. In general, I'm always curious how pro climbers, I'm assuming you consider yourself a pro climber. Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And I'm always curious, like, if you are a full-time pro climber and that's how you make all of your income, or if you have other jobs that you do.
I don't. I am lucky enough to be a full-time climber at the moment. It's not really something I even ever had as a goal, I would guess, growing up, but I always just was really focused on it, and as I got better and got more results and started climbing harder and doing more things on social media, to be honest, too, it just sort of made sense for me to move in that direction, and I feel really lucky to be able to just climb full-time right now.
Yeah. And as a member of the Canadian team, does Canada support you guys?
It's changing. It's a little bit more now, but no is the short answer. Some of the housing sometimes is subsidized depending on the event. Some are more funded than others, but usually flights, travel, accommodation, all of that. No.
It's just you.
Yeah.
You and your sponsors.
Me and my sponsors. Yep, exactly.
Who are your sponsors?
I work with a cool dual sponsor right now. Two of my main sponsors. One is Adidas Terex, which is cool because it's, you know, a big brand that I've always looked up to and always thought was really cool and fun. And I'm pretty excited that I'm on that roster now. That sort of, again, feels like a dream I never even thought of having, but I'm like super honored to be on that team now. And then I'm also an athlete for Otsun, which is a shoe and gear company from the Czech Republic, which is cool in a different way. It's like a family-owned business. The guy who runs it is the founder's son. So it's very close-knit. They really care about the design of things and how much effort is put in and the exact technical specs, and they want your input. And so it's kind of cool to have my two main sponsors be sort of opposite ends of the big brand, small brand sides of things.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really cool that you can just climb all the time and make that your life. And I want to talk a little bit about how that happened, because as you said, you started as an indoor competitor, and now you're branching out more and doing outdoor stuff, which you've had an amazing spring, summer, and the last year, right, has been pretty successful for you.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just start there. So you were the first Canadian female to do a V14.
Yes, true.
Yes. And I read somewhere you were like, well, that part isn't that important to me. It was really just important that it was my first V14.
Yeah. And I think it was also cool for me too that it was I know there's a bunch of debate on whether or not first female ascents of things matter. I know that's like sort of a hot topic, but for me, that was also really cool. Not necessarily that I was like the first Canadian to do it, but that I was the first woman to do that specific boulder, I think was more important to me than the alternative.
So it does matter to you.
Yeah.
Why does it matter to you?
I think, especially growing up, I think the sport was a lot more male dominated than it is now. I think it's growing and changing in that direction, but I think it's really easy for things to get written off as suiting women more, whether it's because they're small holds or the moves are like more flexible or whatever. But I think that can be really frustrating, especially for women in climbing to do a boulder and for people to be like, oh, classic, like, that's every girl's first V10, or like that's every girl's first V11 because the holds are smaller, whatever, as though it takes away from the accomplishment. So it's always just cool to me when I can sort of feel like I'm pushing back on that a little bit, and that it's not like girls are climbing strong because they're quote unquote girly boulders, or they're soft, or like whatever the whatever the slighted backhanded comment tends to be.
Yeah.
I feel like I always feel like it's cool when it's a boulder like that, where I'm like the first woman to do it. Not because it doesn't suit women, but it's because I think female climbers tend to trend towards the same boulders just because it's easier to like see themselves on that boulder, see themselves on that move. So I don't know. For me, it's cool to be able to push back on that a little bit and to do my own thing and find boulders that suit me for me, not just because I have small fingers or because I'm a girl or whatever the excuse is.
Yeah. So tell me about the boulder. Like, did you pick it because it is notoriously not, in quotes, girly? Or
yeah, you know, I don't think so. I think I just was sort of looking for a boulder at that next level that suited me well. And was close to home. I hadn't really ever had a project that was here or wherever I'm living. So that boulder, Show Your Scars, is in Ogden, Utah, which is just north of Salt Lake. And I could go alone to be working on it too, was another big factor for me. So I didn't have to drag people along with me or, you know, carpool or whatever the thing was. It could just be about me and that boulder. And I don't necessarily think I was searching for it. I went up over like a year and a half ago now with my boyfriend, Palmer Larson, was trying it at the time. And I couldn't do any of the moves, but I remember like being pushed onto the boulder and realizing that the moves were big, but I could physically span them. Like I could, it's sort of a big, long, far moves. So I think that first time being up there, I realized that I could physically span the moves. And then it's just it's like one of the only V14s in the area. So I decided to go up there and see if it was possible. And then slowly just the pieces started coming together and it all sort of rolled on from there.
Yeah. And it only took you a few weeks of work, right?
Yeah. I think it was 10 sessions, but all squeezed into like 3.5 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, that's not very long, right?
Yeah, it felt long at the time. I think just because it was like all I was thinking about for 3.5 weeks, which feels like forever. But I think it was actually Matt Fultz who commented on the post afterwards and was like, 10 sessions is not that long. Like, just so you know.
Right? Like, people spend years on the same boulders.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, admittedly, I think that's something I struggle with, is to be able to... It both benefits me and it doesn't. Like, I think I have a slightly obsessive personality. It would be hard for me to just go a couple sessions 1 month and then take like 2 months away from the boulder and then come back for a couple sessions and then do that over the span of years. I think it would be good for me to get to the place where I can do that and have multiple things going on and not feel so desperate about a specific thing, whether that's a competition or a boulder or something along those lines. But yeah, that's definitely something I'm working on, is being a little bit more level-headed when I'm climbing.
Okay, I'm going to circle back to that.
All right, noted.
I do have a couple questions. So since it didn't take you that long, I mean, relatively speaking, does it make you want to try to do more of that grade or even maybe V15?
For sure it does. I do feel like I have, I mean, I think... bucket list dream goal would be to do a V15 for sure. I feel like I have some more building blocks to do before I get there. I'd like to do more 8B, 8B plus, V13, V14 type boulders of different styles and in different places too. A lot of the hard bouldering I've done has just been close to home here in Salt Lake. So yeah, I mean, I think it's going to take me a little while to build up to that and to hopefully then eventually find a V15 that's either close to where I am or that's easy to relocate to for a good chunk of time. But yeah, I do. I'm honestly fairly new into the whole outdoor climbing projecting experience in the grand scheme of things. You know, I've just started dedicating most of my time to it exclusively in the past year and a half or so. Which has also been interesting. It's interesting to have, I feel like, to have the strength that's required to climb hard, but then have to sort of reverse backwards, learn the things like the tactics and the mental ability to top out a boulder when you're high off the ground, and to like stay calm up there, and to bring a rope and rappel down the boulder first and clean it, and all those tactical things that you would learn, you know, growing up if you had a mentor who would take you out bouldering a lot. I didn't do that, and I didn't know, and I didn't learn. So it was a strange experience to have invested more time in climbing outside, but to be coming from a gym background and to have to like feel like a beginner in a lot of ways, but then have the strength and ability to do hard moves, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense.
It's like you do, you know, I would like do the crux of a really hard boulder, and then the top out would be tall and scary and V5, but I haven't really done that many V5. So I would be like pretty gripped up high off the ground, and my spotters would freak out. And so it's just been sort of an experience learning the tactics, the mental skills, all of the things that surround being able to climb outside well and safely.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I was just watching the video of you sending Show Your Scars, and somebody behind the camera was like, to the summit. And I was like, oh, cool. She's about to top out. And then it was like 20 more feet to the top. And I was like, she's free soloing.
Yeah. I
wonder how that felt.
That there. Honestly, the top of that boulder, super easy. Like as soon as you like hit the lip, you're essentially hiking, but it is very chossy. So it just feels really scary. Like you sort of like tap on holds and you're like, okay, I guess I'll just fucking wait this. It's okay. And then you like get to the next one. You're like, oh, thank God. And then you like pull on, you know, you tap the next one. So that one was just, that boulder is just a little chossy at the top, but.
Okay. That's good.
I didn't feel like I was going to die at any point. Only a little.
Yeah. But so you're kind of being humbled in ways while also like really climbing pretty hard, pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one thing that I've always found incredible about climbing in general is no matter how good you get, no matter how strong you feel, there's always some sort of element, component, new discipline, whether it's like trad or multi-pitch or mountaineering or whatever venue there is, you know, it's pretty easy to be humbled in climbing. Yeah. But yeah, it was an interesting experience to be humbled in a way that felt so close to home, you know, to feel like this is things I should be able to do and I should know how to do. And I didn't, you know, I always feel like it's interesting when you feel like you should feel some way. Cause I don't know who's telling me I should feel some way, but yeah, it was a good learning experience. It all, you know, it came fairly quickly. It's not like any of those things are highly technical, but, definitely the mental component is something that I'm still working on, being confident high up off the ground and on moves that I know are in my ability, but not getting sketched out when I'm topping out is still a work in progress.
Yeah. I mean, you said, and I haven't done that many V5. So do you feel like part of your goal is to round out your pyramid, so to speak?
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to, it's pretty easy for me to get sucked into doing the like, you know, tension board warm up on the tree and then just pull onto the proj. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to start encouraging myself to do the easier boulders that are near whatever I'm working on or things like that, just to be able to build up my experience and my movement styles and things like that. But you know, it's not that living here and having Joe's Valley and Little Cottonwood and things so close, there's so much access to easier climbing that it hasn't been too difficult to push myself to do that.
Yeah. It's so interesting being able to talk to you like a really high level competitor, because when I watch World Cups or whatever, the Olympics with friends, we're always like, this is just not climbing. Like it's really fun to watch, but there's not a boulder in the world that's like this outside. And so for you, I'm really curious how those skills have transferred over to bouldering outside, or, you know, what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a common narrative about comp climbing, especially the way that it's been trending. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a very general baseline skills that are required to climb outside and to do competition boulders are really similar. Like your finger strength, your lock off ability, your like all the very basic, you know, if you were going to do a strength assessment on a climber, whether they were a comp climber or a rock climber, they would be similar things, similar metrics that you're testing. I would say the one difference would maybe be the more explosive leg power and things like that for comp climbing. I think the development of leg strength is really the one of the biggest sort of transitions in requirements from bouldering outside to in a comp. You know, you got to be able to do pretty insane pistol squats or run across moves or whatever that looks like. But yeah, I mean, I feel like although the coordination component, I think, is really what's different in comps than outside, you know, you're doing big double clutch dynos or whatever that looks like. Still, when you break it down, it requires a lot of finger strength. It requires a lot of core stability. It requires a lot of hand-eye coordination in a way. And all of those things have really helped me when climbing outside, especially in terms of, like I said, power recruitment. Like, it's easier to do a big move on rock when you've been practicing doing massive comp dynos. Like, it just feels less intense in terms of the requirement. So while I do think they are very different in terms of execution and mentally as well, actually, like, I think there's a different fear component. You know, sometimes when you're climbing outside, you're afraid that you're going to fall and hurt yourself. Like, the landing is what's scary. Whereas sometimes in a comp, it's like the actual move is scary. Like, you're like, oh, if I feel like my shoulder's going to pop out if I do this move, or like, I'm going to land and my knee's going to be facing the wrong way. Or I think for me, at least, that's one of the big mental components, is being afraid of the actual move hurting me in a comp. Whereas outside, that's rare.
And you're not ever afraid of falling inside when you are outside?
Yeah. I get most scared in outside in a no-fall zone, though, I will say. Like, if I have taken the fall and I hit the pads and I'm fine, then I'll be fine on that move for forever. But if it's, like, the kind of thing where you have to rehearse it on a rope, and, like, once you get up there, you, like, really don't want to fall, that's when I struggle.
Yeah.
Even if it's within my ability.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think you're not wrong. I think comp climbing and the style of the boulder is completely different in a lot of ways than outdoor climbing. But I think the thing that is similar and the thing that has helped me is those very basic climbing metrics and requirements that are similar.
Which leads me to my next question, which is, like, with your training now, is it different than it was before when you're just comp climbing?
Absolutely. A lot of comp climbing is execution. The boulders physically are a lot of times within your ability, and it's all a matter of learning the movement quickly. If it's a jump, you know, you have to learn from every try because you only have 5 minutes or 4 minutes or whatever the time constraint is. So a lot of training for comps is practice. You know, practice doing a mock round where you do 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off, and you give yourself only 5 minutes on a boulder. Or you're trying to learn a new slab skill and you're just standing up on one leg over and over and over again on a slab, or whatever that looks like, that element of intense practice on movement styles, I do a lot less of. So a lot more of my actual climbing now is board climbing on the spray wall. I still do a lot of hangboarding and a lot of strength training, and I will do, you know, gym boulders, but I do a lot less practice on comp style movement, which is huge when you're training for comps.
Yeah. Well, so did you feel that when you just competed recently?
I mean, it totally depends on the comp. Like, I think in a lot of ways I lucked out. There wasn't anything that was super involved coordination wise or volume pressing wise. There wasn't so much funk. It was a lot of hold grabbing at that specific comp. So no, I think maybe I could have done better in finals if I had been training that style and that mental ability to execute in 5 minutes and be tactical about when you're trying and how much you're trying. That's something that I think you need practice to learn and to remember. So I definitely think little tweaks would have made a big difference in my training in terms of being able to execute on that style of boulder. But I mean, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get into a round and the requirement of the boulder is just holding holds, and that aspect, even if it's a jump, is similar to to outside. Because sometimes you get jumps in comps where you have to land perfectly on a foot and the handhold is really small. So you have to be like, make sure you're really well balanced. But sometimes they set a jump and you're jumping to a crimp and all you got to do is hold on, which is similar to outside. So I think you can get away with climbing outside and still doing well at comps, but there could also be a scenario where the round is set in a way that requires more time and practice. And I think I just lucked out in Vail that that was not the case.
Yeah. With you climbing more on boards and less on those types of boulders inside, does that mean you are climbing less with Kyra?
Yes and no. Kyra Condi is admittedly the queen of spray walls. Okay. She does prefer a different gym at the moment to me. So we actually climb at different gyms a lot and we have different schedules. And now that things are more open in the world, we don't do every single thing together, which I think makes the internet quite sad, but just is the way life goes. but yeah, I mean, she is on the lead team this year. So she's been doing a lot of like circuits and stuff too, which is not what I'm training for. So I think our training is different at the moment for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah. Okay. We do. The internet, I will speak for all of us, really does love it when you guys train together.
I know. And we love it too, but you know, and we do. We dabble, but she's in Europe now for a month. So the internet will have to wait a little longer for our next one.
So I want to talk in depth about your training, but I want to go back to your level-headed comment saying that, you know, it's something that you work on. And I have a few questions about it. So my first question is, when you went back and competed recently in Vail, it seems like you were saying that you had a better perspective on things and it was nice and maybe refreshing to go back. Can you tell me about your headspace then compared to like right before you quit comps?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I think a lot of it was circumstantial. Like there was no pressure on that comp for me. Like I didn't really tell anyone I was going. I just sort of registered last minute and showed up. You know, I could have come in last and not said anything about it. And people probably really wouldn't have noticed. So I think it just situationally was really low pressure. It was like fun to be there and to be hanging out in the comp scene again and to be in Vail, which is always super fun for the GoPro games. So there was just having the ability to relax just situationally, I think was almost all of it. I think my mental skills still have a lot of work, both outdoor, indoor. But yeah, I think climbing with other people over the past few years and sort of learning more, I guess, more tactics in order to like re-center myself when I feel myself getting anxious or angry or sad or whatever that negative emotion is when I'm competing. Like I have more tools in my toolbox to like remind myself that the comp is still going and that if you spiral out on the second boulder, then you're for sure not going to make the next round because you still have two left and you know it's not over till it's over and whatever those like mental cues that you can have. I think I have more of those. I had our national team coach in Canada, Andrew Wilson, once told me that. I think I was talking to him about not wanting to spiral so much and be so hard on myself and have so much negative self-talk, because I do usually when I'm competing, and you can even, you know, from a crowd, you can see it in my face and my body language and everything. I'm not that good at hiding it. And I think I told him something like, oh, I just, like, I don't know why I feel that way when I'm competing. And he told me that, you know, that's not something we can stop. Like, you know, you would never want yourself to stop feeling your emotions, because you're allowed to feel whatever you feel. But you have to then dictate the way that you respond to them, whether you let them get in your head or not. So it's like you're not repressing yourself from feeling emotion, because that is also not helpful. But you're allowing yourself to feel something and then analyze why you're feeling that way and allow it to move out of your head. So I think that sort of concept is what I've been working on, is like, I'm allowed to be frustrated, you know, negative self-talks happen sometimes, but to allow myself to feel those things and then think about why I'm really feeling those and what part of that is actually real or what part of that I've made up. And then to be able to just push it out of your head, which is the part of that that I'm working on, I think.
Mm. Do you feel like you did that in Vail, or did you just not even have an opportunity to feel bad?
I mean, a little bit, but I think the comp also went well. Like, I think it was like a hard comp to measure that specific skill on because it was low pressure and I did fine. You know, I did as well as I should have expected, I think, to do. So I think it was a hard situation to measure. I did in finals, I topped a boulder by matching the volume that the finish hold was on, and the finish hold was the hold, not the volume. So I didn't get the top. I topped the boulder. It was like the best buzzer beater of my life. Like, it was like counting down and I mashed the hold and I like full on celebrated and jumped down, and the judge just like shook their head at me and was like, no. And that I was brutalized by that. Like, that I really slipped back into that negative space. But I think I did a good job then in that scenario of like accepting that it is what it is. And all I could do then was try to do my best on the last boulder and see what happened. And, you know, it turns out it wasn't enough to recover from that mistake that, you know, cost me a podium place. But yeah, I think sort of just being in a place where you can accept things as they are, you know, this just is what it is. And that's all, you know, that's all the meaning you have to take from it.
Yeah. So you feel like you were able to go on to the next boulder and have a clear head?
I think so. I think it took me a while. It took me, I think, longer than I would have liked. I think I was really mad about it and pouty in ISO in the back for, you know, the rest of the time that it took for everybody else to climb that boulder. But I think I figured out how to be in a better space by the time I came out for the last one, for sure.
Is this something that you struggle with on your projects outside too?
For sure. I think the way I react to failure also is something that dictates the success that I'm going to have that day. You know, I fall off a boulder once and I like get really mad about it. I can sort of tell that it's not going to be the greatest of days. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of a double-edged sword. I feel like I have gotten far in my climbing career because I wear my heart on my sleeve and I put my emotion into my climbing and I'm very invested in it and I care a lot. And I can put all of that emotion towards doing a move and it allows me to try really hard. And I don't want that to be something that goes away. Cause like I said, that determination and that drive, I think, is one of an asset of mine and something that helps me a lot. But it's a matter of not allowing that drive to turn negative in an inward sense onto myself and being able to remember to be grateful and, you know, look at things in perspective and be able to feel emotion and not let it affect me in a negative way and still make the session successful, even if I do have negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really hard and it takes a lot of practice.
Yeah, but I mean, and it's been good to practice doing that outside. I think I've been learning a lot more outdoors than I ever would in comps. You know, competitions are such a snapshot of time in people's life. You know, you, like I said, you are, all eyes are on you. You're like essentially performing on a stage for 45 minutes and that's all you get. Whereas when you're climbing outside and you have a project and you can go day after day, you can sort of reflect more on, oh, this session, like, my brain feels better than it did last session. And like, let's think about why, and like, why am I in this place? And now can I physically see that when I'm in a more positive space, I'm climbing better than when I was in a negative space? Like, it's a lot easier to break things down and to be able to see how one thing affects another in a quantifiable way. Whereas in a comp, it's easy to just write things off. Like, oh, that boulder was too hard. I'd never do that in training, because you don't know. Like, I'm never going to see that boulder again. So it's not like I can show up the next day and try it and be like, oh, it actually was easy. Like, I was totally a mental block.
Mm.
You know, people That's can true. Tell you that, but you're never, I'm never going to know that. I'm never going to like go back to that boulder and see that for myself. Whereas outside, I can do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting to see the contrast between indoor and outdoor climbing for you.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I do have an obsessive personality, and I like to call myself a recovering perfectionist, because that really got in my way as a teenager and growing up. So it's been learning that too, like learning that some, you know, you don't have to grab every single hold exactly right. Like, sometimes you just have to dig deep and try hard, and it's not going to be pretty, but somehow you'll make it to the next hold and then go from there. You know, it's been good. The process of learning to climb outside has been better for me mentally than trying to learn through comps ever was. But it'll be an interesting experience now to see if that can relate back to comps and to see if I can, you know, turn this thing around.
Well, I mean, is that the ultimate goal, is to turn it around?
I don't know. I sort of am allowing myself not to really have too many intense comp goals at the moment. Like I said, sort of just keeping my foot in the door and seeing how these next few comps coming up go. And some of those have, you know, points for our Canadian ranking system, and we'll have nationals in the end of the year and in the early next year. And I think it's easier for me to set outdoor goals at the moment and just sort of take comps day by day, at least at the moment.
Yeah. So I ask certain people this question, and I am going to ask you, and that is, what do you think sets you apart from other climbers, both physically and mentally? Like, obviously you're elite, like elite of elite. So what is it about you, do you think?
I mean, we're backtracking a little bit, but I do think it's my emotion level and my desire to like be authentic when I'm climbing. I think somebody that I look up to who has always really done that is Alex Johnson. AJ, I climb with her a lot now. I think we're good climbing buddies because of that. I think we both aren't afraid to reveal that we really care, and that, like, you know, it's just a sport, it's just climbing, but it's so ingrained in who we are at this point that we just are all in emotionally, mentally, physically, and we allow each other to be that whenever we're training. And I think we're both really honest with, you know, she'll fall off something and I'll go, you did not try hard at all that time. And then she's like, oh, you're right. And she like pulls back on. And I think having that ability to be so invested in something and to care so much and to be honest about the fact that you care a lot. Like, I think there is this culture in climbing about, you know, like, it's cool not to care so much.
Mm-hmm.
At least I've always felt that pressure to like hide disappointment and hide feeling sad about failure, because, you know, it's cool to treat climbing as just a lifestyle zen sport. But it's never been that for me. It's always been a roller coaster. It's always been very emotional. It's always been really, really high moments and really, really low moments. And that, I think I'm learning to accept that about myself, learning how to use it for good and not let it affect me negatively. And also acknowledging that it is, I think, something that is unique, but also is suppressed in other people. So I hope that in posting about it and just being the way I am climbing outside, it will encourage people to feel like it's okay to care, and it doesn't have to be the same mellow zen mode for every single person. And then physically, I think it probably is my finger strength. My hangboarding ability probably is up there.
Yeah. Okay, let's just backtrack there for a sec. So if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, Tyler Nelson did some testing on you, and I don't know if you knew it before then, but got some unbelievable results out of you. Can you tell me about those?
Yeah, I've been to Tyler Nelson twice now, and he does a lot of like isometric testing. So he hangs a tension board on, like, a tension block on a scale, and then he straps you into the bottom like a roller coaster ride, and then just has you pull as hard as you can and see how much force you can generate. And the last time I went to him was the first time he had me try to just pull on a bar, not a tension block. And I think on my left arm, I pulled like 380 something pounds, maybe 370 pounds. I'm not totally sure, but I guess that was really high. He even tested the scale cause he thought it was broken. So he like hung on it and weighed his own body weight. And then had me pull on different edge sizes. And I think I pulled 201 pounds on my left arm on a 20 mil edge.
Do you know how that compares with other, say, male climbers?
I don't, actually. I've never asked him about the... I mean, I think it is more than he hasn't measured everybody, obviously, but it is more than he has ever measured, I think.
Yeah.
Especially strength to weight ratio, for sure. Yeah.
It's like off the charts.
He like emailed his biomechanics friend and was like, I don't understand how this is possible. Please help me. But it is interesting because I have a really, really long ape index. My wingspan is 6'1.5" and I'm 5'6". So my arms are really long for my height, which makes lock-offs hard. Mm-hmm. But the theory then is that my capacity for generating force in a straight arm position is really, really high because my arms are so long. And if I don't have to hold that levered position, he actually lowered the bar then to be just above my head. So my arm was in a 90 degree angle instead of straight, and I could barely pull my own body weight, which makes sense because I can barely hold a lock off on either arm. So yeah, it just goes to show it's interesting how everybody has their different strengths and weaknesses. And he actually told me that he thought I should just keep training my fingers and try to get them as strong as possible because I'm going to plateau and level out at some point in terms of lock-offs. You know, I'm going to obviously keep training them, but he says my finger strength is exponential. So maybe I can get to the point where I just can monkey swing to every hole and I won't have to pull at all.
Well, yeah, so... Do you feel like you train lock-offs more now since knowing that?
You know, I feel like I've been training pulling and trying to figure out how to get better at that since I started climbing when I was 9. Like, I was, like, the only one on the team that couldn't do pull-ups consistently. Mm.
You're like, this is why, guys.
I'm like, look at my, it's my arms. My arms. Guys, it's not my fault. But I feel like nothing has stood out as, like, really working more than anything. I think the thing that made the most difference was just iso pulls. So, like, locking myself in, again, like a roller coaster, and then just pulling on a ring as hard as possible in a 90-degree position. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think I'll keep working on them forever, for sure. But I don't think I'll ever get to a place where, like, I'm known for being really good at lock-offs. Like, I just don't – that's not – I don't think that's – anatomically in my future. But yeah, you know, it's frustrating to like have something that's, you know, a weakness that's hard to improve upon. I feel like everybody has that.
Yeah,
but I found it's useful to vary exercises, to try different things. One, because that's just like a fundamental training principle to vary exercises, but two, just because, you know, I'm in this lock-off battle for life, I think, so I might as well have some sort of variety and keep it interesting in what I'm doing.
Yeah. So, do you feel, like, when you got the news that you were the strongest person on Earth?
Right, that day.
How did that feel? It seems like you take sort of a detached approach to it.
A little bit, yeah. I do, for sure. I don't know, I mean, it's nice. I love going to Tyler Nelson. It's like a huge confidence booster. I just sit there and he just goes, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And I'm like, nice. I love coming here. This is the best. But
I'm so strong.
I'm like, sweet. I don't really get it either. Like, I think people ask me that pretty consistently about like, oh, how did you get to this point? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, one is I just really love hangboarding. I genuinely love doing it. Like, I have hangboarded 2 or 3 times a week, probably almost for like 5 or 6 years. Like, that is my, you know. And when I started, I just posted a video the other day on my story, actually, of Kyra encouraging me to try to hang the middle Beastmaker edge with weight for the first time ever. And I hung with 2.5 pounds in my right hand for approximately 3 seconds, and I was super stoked about it. Nice. And I was like celebrating, whatever. That was like 5 years ago. So, I mean, it's not like I've always been hanging this like outrageous amount of weight. I do think my capacity for gaining strength there is freakish for some reason. And I don't think I knew that when I started, but, I do think I really like, I like hangboarding. I like that it's quantifiable. I like that you can watch the progression in it. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely weird to feel like, you know, alien a little bit when you post about it, or when people post about it and talk about it as being, you know, next level or unusual.
Yeah. But yeah. And just as the contrast, when you posted that of you hanging with like a whatever 3 pound weight in your right hand, what do you hang now with that in your right hand?
75 pounds.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted you to say that is because, like, that's really motivating.
Yeah.
That's super motivating. How long ago was that?
I think 5 years ago. I think maybe 5 and a half now, but yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a lot of work. Like, that's a lot of dedication and commitment and, you know, all the things that it takes to be a good athlete. Now, would you say that in those 5 years, you've gotten exponentially stronger as a rock climber?
For sure. I wouldn't say it's exclusively because of my ability to hang the middle Beastmaker edge with extra weight. but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a lot of components to me being a better rock climber than I was, but yeah, I don't know what, if there was like a main thing that I feel like was different. I think I just buckled down on a lot of the things that I felt I needed to, whether it was getting, you know, I had coaches for a while. I didn't have coaches at that time when I was hanging that much weight with Kyra. Like, I wasn't working with anybody. So I worked with coaches for 3 or 4 years and got my general fitness, general strength and conditioning up a lot from what it was. And just having regular feedback on climbing and what you're lacking and all those kinds of things was really helpful. And then being here in Salt Lake has been great too. I mean, it's sort of hard, to be honest. It's sort of hard to be in an area where you're just surrounded by people whose whole lives are dedicated to climbing and who are always pushing for the next thing and doing something inspiring and, you know, pushing themselves. It's a lot of intensity, I would say, to be around. You know, sometimes it's exhausting. You just want to like go into the gym and have fun, and people are, turns into a competition, and that's great for training and great for motivation, but it has helped me be a better climber, to be able to climb with new people every time and to sort of walk into a gym and feel like if I'm not trying as hard as I can and I'm not doing my best, somebody else is doing that better than me, just it's even in Salt Lake in the area.
A competitive mindset for you a bit.
Sorry, what was the question?
It's sort of a competitive mindset for you, like even if you're in the gym or wherever you're
totally coming. I mean, I just even talking about, I mean, I already mentioned feeling like caring about things is something that's repressed in climbing. I think especially for girls and women in climbing, being competitive is something that's also repressed. Like, I admittedly am a super competitive person. It has also one thing that has kept me around in the sport for as long as it has, and still competing and still allowing myself to, you know, it's not like you're directly competing with somebody who's in the gym doing the same boulder as you, but to, you know, feel a little bit of competition if you're working on a boulder and somebody else does it. I think it's a pretty common occurrence that you're sitting in front of a boulder trying it alone, and then, you know, AJ comes up and goes, oh, hey, how's it going? And does the boulder first go. Like, a lot of times I will do it the next go because I'm like, ah, man, like I just am not trying hard enough, and then I will do it. And I do think that comes from competitiveness. I think to say it's like motivation or inspirational is true to some degree, but I also think for me it's like you know, I've looked up to AJ for a long time. I want to be as good as she is. Like, and she is an incredible athlete and we are competitive with each other. And I think talking about finding good climbing buddies, like that's also something we have in common. Like we are both really competitive and we both acknowledge it. And I think a lot of people don't acknowledge it. I think it's talked about a lot that climbing is a really good community and everybody wants the best for each other and everybody's supportive and everybody's friends, which is true. But at the end of the day, also everybody would rather that they are winning. Like, you know, if I talk to any competitive athlete who's at USA Climbing, like they would obviously say that they have friends, they love everybody, they want the best for everybody, but they would rather be the winner than whoever else is their friends at that comp. Mm-hmm. And I think that aspect of it is overlooked a little bit and pushed under the rug.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, just because it is such a great community and it is something that I think should be encouraged and supported. And that sportsmanship thing is obviously really, really important. But for some reason in climbing compared to other sports, like that concept of being competitive and really wanting to win is less talked about. I think, I don't know why that is the way it is, but
it is. It's interesting because I find myself as you're talking about this being like, well, but it's a healthy competition, right? It's like, you know, I want to smooth it out because, yeah, we're told that it's bad. But I do wonder, does it make it hard for you to feel happy for AJ
sometimes? I mean, I don't think so. Like, I, you know, if I think of my ideal day out at a Boulder, we both do the Boulder and then we walk home and we go, that was sick. We both did the Boulder. Like, I think like, or in a competition, like, I don't want to be the best because everybody else is the worst. Like, I want everybody to climb their best and have a really good day, but then also for me to be better than them. Like, that, it's not like you're not thinking negatively about other people. You're not hoping that anybody's going to have something bad happen to them or they're not going to do it. Or they're like, you're not thinking down upon other people, but there is sort of I am competitive. I have a drive. I want to be winning. I want to be doing my best. I want to send the Boulder that day. And I think that that is okay. And it doesn't mean that I'm thinking negatively about other people. Like, I think there's sort of that imbalance of thinking that if you're competitive and like you're really focused on winning, like you don't care about any of the other people, which is just not true. Like, I think mm-hmm. there is a healthy level of competition. And I think none of us athletes would be competing if we weren't competitive. Like, I think that's an interesting to be like, oh, climbing, you know, everybody is just one big happy family. And I'm like, no, all these people who are here want to win. Like, they would not be competing into their late teens, early 20s, into their 30s if they did not have that drive to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but some of the things that you're saying are, I think that there are some people who would want people to have a bad day so that they could win. Or they
totally
would want bad things to happen to people so that they didn't send.
I mean, I think we're really lucky to not have that much in climbing. Like, I think there is something that is very, very special about the climbing community. I think that conversation around it is completely accurate. You know, the sort of image that you get even at an IFSC comp of all of the finalists all sitting on those benches on the side of the competition arena and hugging when each other win and cheering for each other. And I think that is really genuine. I don't think that's mm-hmm. an act. I don't think that is anything less than authentic. Like, I think people really want the best for one another and are good at having those moments of feeling sad for themselves, but also feeling happy for other people and vice versa. You know, I think you can win a comp and be like, man, that was really fun, but I'm so bummed that so-and-so had a really bad day. Like, I think that both of those can exist together and that is really healthy and that is common in climbing and that the negative way that competitiveness is painted doesn't exist that much in climbing. And I think we are really lucky for that.
Well, I think it also might have to do with coaching. And I think that there are probably coaches listening to this being like, ooh, what did her coaches tell her to get her to think this way? Because it is a very healthy take on competitiveness, I think. And so do you have any moments you can remember or things that your coaches taught you as a kid about that?
You know, I don't have any moments that really stand out. I don't think, I mean, I think genuinely it was just something that wasn't talked about that much. Mm. It was just the only things I heard was how great climbing was because everybody loved everybody. And that's just like the only thing that I heard was how great the community was, how great everybody was best friends. And like, that is true. Like, I think that is something that's great, but somehow it never felt comfortable to discuss wanting to win or like wanting to be the best. Like that, for some reason, it was all about being together as a community. I mean, it was a lot smaller back then too. So if you're talking about like, I want to be the best, you're like better than five people, not like maybe 105. Maybe
just a Canadian thing.
Maybe it's a Canadian thing. Yeah. I don't know. So maybe that's less, but I mean, Kyra's talked about that too. You know, Kyra is also quite competitive, and I think it just got to, it was, you know, we've talked about this a lot, especially leading up to the Olympics, but we have talked about both of us sort of feeling like competitiveness was not okay, or meant you had an ego, or whatever the situation was that it was more, not more important. 'Cause I think being a good teammate and being a good friend is equally as important to want to win. I think neither of those are more important than the other, but that it was okay to show up to a comp and want to win. Mm-hmm. And I think for me in particular, I don't know, again, I don't know why. I think it maybe was also just my brain and the way my brain works. You know, I've had self-confidence issues for a long time, but I think I still, to this day, I don't know if I've ever shown up to a competition and been like, man, I really, I'm like in this, I'm showing up here to win. Like that's still, there's a mental block for me on that front.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I wonder how many winners go into competitions thinking, I'm going to win this. I'm here to win.
Yeah. AJ has talked about it, about, you know, she goes to a comp and her goal is to be on the top podium. Mm-hmm. And that's just every single comp.
Yeah.
That's whereas like the opposition to that, like I, you know, I'll go to a comp and be like, man, I really hope I don't come in last. And like, that's it. That's all. Whereas like, even if I'm at a comp where the, you know, I've historically done really well, I've like proven that I'm at the ability of making finals, being on the podium, winning, I'll still roll up to that comp and go, man, I really hope I don't come in last. Oh, and I had a coach, I told my coach when I was an adult that one time, he was like, what are you talking? Like, what? That's your goal, is to not come in last? Are you kidding me? Like, what? Anyway.
More to work on.
More to work on. Everything I'm saying is not coming from a place of expert knowledge. It is right? From a place of process.
Disclaimer. Yeah, I'm like, what would it feel like to show up to the crag and be like, yeah, I'm here to send. I'm going to send.
Yeah.
It's only happened to me like two times where I was like, yep, I'm going to send that. And then I did.
I mean, it's a powerful feeling. I've done that a couple times too. Again, only a couple. But it's awesome. You like, yeah. Superstar moment for sure.
Yeah. Super empowering.
But it's a slippery slope. If you show up to a crag and you're like, I'm going to send today, and then you don't send, like, you know, then you set yourself up for disappointment. So I don't know.
I know. And I think that's what we're all trying to protect ourselves from, is disappointment. And then you're like, well, who cares? It's just disappointment. Like, I'll get over it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, for me, what's been a really interesting battle, another sort of double-edged sword that I've been trying to learn, similar to the, like, I think my emotions have gotten me far, but I can't let them get the best of me. Wanting to be confident, but not so confident that I'm disappointed if I don't live up to whatever the intention was for the day.
Yeah, it's fine balance. So speaking of confidence, I do want to talk a little bit about body image topics, because it was really, I started following you on Instagram because of your hilarious posts. Like, you're really funny. And so basically whenever you post something, I'm like, yay, Allison posted. And I'm gonna listen to what you say, you know, and pay attention. And when you posted that about your body and feeling insecure about it and showing pictures that you hadn't shown before, like I thought that was really moving and important. And I think that, you know, there's been more and more of that, but I really appreciated that you had done that. So first I want to say that, but my questions about it are like, what are your feelings about that now? And what kind of response did you get, or I don't know, even like emotional consequences from that post did you have?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, thank you. That is really nice. And I'm glad it was impactful for people, because that was the point. I think the act of posting it came from seeing this trend in the sport of people thinking really negatively of their bodies and developing unhealthy habits with food and using that in order to be successful. And it's frustrating and sad and hard to watch happen in the sport. And I think I've felt that way for a while and sort of got to this point where I was like, well, I can do something about it. Like, I can talk about it there. You know, I would just keep saying in conversations like, oh, people should talk about this more. And I'm like, I'm people, like, I can, I can do something. But yeah, I mean, I think it's hard. It's hard to be surrounded by athletes who look really different than you and who are, when they're in peak form, they're like shredded and ripped and have full six packs. And after Carolyn Treadway's documentary Light came out, Kyra and I sort of talked about our feelings about it on our Instagrams afterwards. And I said that, you know, I had an unhealthy relationship with food when I was in high school, and I still didn't have abs. Like, I was like, kind of, my arms and legs lost muscle, and I was like definitely skinnier than I am now, but I still didn't have the shredded abs that I wanted. And I remember just being completely devastated by that and thinking that I was unworthy of sending hard, or now moving into my adult life, unworthy of identifying as a professional athlete, or all of these things, purely because I don't look the way that fitness models look, or I'm not like super shredded. And, you know, I look like I have a slight belly when I am slouching because I don't have that great of posture, or like whatever the situation is, that there would be a photo that would be taken of me, and if it looked like I didn't have abs in it, like, I would delete it, or like, I wouldn't want it on my phone or whatever. And I had been doing that for so long that I almost didn't realize it until I posted that. I'm not like, and that post, I hope something that was conveyed through that post was like, I'm not speaking from being on the other side and being like super body confident now. Like, that was sort of a stepping stone for me of being like, me hiding the photos that I don't look super ripped in is not helping this community move past whatever this fixation on looking a certain way is. Like, in order for me to be part of the solution, I can't be a proponent to this concept that you have to look that way in order to climb well. Like, I feel like I'm stronger than I've ever been. I'm in better shape than I've ever been. I'm doing some of the harder climbs than I literally ever imagined I would ever be able to do as a child, as a teenager with a problem with eating, harder boulders than even I knew existed. And I still don't have abs, and I need to start accepting that that's okay. And I figured that beginning to do that publicly was the best way that I could benefit the community and be a good role model for the people that are coming up behind me in the sport.
Yeah. Well, you did. You did help. You did contribute. And how do you feel now? Like, do you feel like you're getting through that a little bit? Are you feeling differently about it at all?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a scary thing to post that. I don't know why. Like, I mean, after I posted it, then it was like, obviously there's no negativity on it. I think that would have been pretty crazy if there were people putting hate comments on that, but you never know with the internet, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's one thing to like try to convince yourself that everybody has some sort of insecurity. Not everybody looks the same. Feeling and being strong is not a physical look. Like, everybody doesn't look the same way if they're in their peak physical shape. And you can tell yourself that, but to hear it and to see it from all the people that were responding to that and messaging me about it, it definitely makes a difference for sure to like convince yourself that that is true. Yeah. And I just feel like it's a necessary narrative, you know, not that like, oh, I'm not in that good of shape, but like, I'm happy and healthy, which is like a great thing too, as a conversation, but also that like, I am in peak physical shape than I ever have been in my entire life. And it does not look like I thought it would look when I was growing up and looking at Instagram and magazines and photos of people climbing really hard things. And I don't look like that. And that I have to accept that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like a, probably a daily chore to do that.
For sure it is. It's like, yeah, I mean, I try to remind myself of that all the time. And sometimes, you know, some days are worse than others. Some days you just can't really get over it. But hopefully over time you have less and less of those days and it's less of a battle. And you are, you know, the goal is that I allow myself to exist however I look that day and I don't even think about it.
That's great. Yeah. Question about World Cup climbers. I have so many conversations about this, and especially as a nutrition professional, like watching certain competitors get to really low weights. I know this is a really sensitive topic, but do you have any thoughts on like how maybe the governing bodies, the IFSC, for instance, could help with that?
I mean, it's really hard. I feel like it's a hard, it's a slippery slope. One thing that they do is BMI testing already in ISO. But there's not really a sanction that goes along with it, as far as I know. Like, I think your federation would get a letter if you fail, but you don't, like, you don't get, you know, they don't come in like a troop of security guards and drag you out of ISO if you fail the BMI test. I don't think that's what they should do, but I do think it's like traumatizing to weigh athletes in ISO. Like, I think that is a very intense thing to be doing, to have athletes come into ISO and weigh them and do a BMI testing right before they're about to climb in semifinals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do think if they're going to do that, there should be a consequence related. And if the BMI testing isn't a good enough test to have a consequence related, then they shouldn't do it. Like, I don't think it's worth weighing athletes and putting them through that stress right before they compete if it's not going to have any impact, I think is one thing. So I think there's like things in place that they are doing, but that don't necessarily have an impactful outcome. And I don't like that for sure. Mm-hmm. Especially for like, I know there are a bunch of athletes who have had eating disorders or issues with food who don't anymore. And for those athletes to be weighed is like also, I think, pretty traumatic. And if it's what you have to do to get into semifinals, that's great. But again, if it's not regulated, I don't know. I mean, I think testing is hard. I think testing of any variety is really hard. I think if you're failing a lot of the tests, you're already at a point where it's a really, really big issue and it should have been addressed a long time ago. I think it would be cool. I think a lot of athletes who have struggled with it, me included, have sort of wanted to reach out for help and know that it's an issue. Like, it's not something they do unconsciously. Like, you know, I was aware that it was a problem, but I didn't really know where to go and how to handle it. So I honestly think like some sort of IFSC resources for people that are known, you know, I know it takes funding and money to be able to have a, you know, a sanctioned therapist on hand. But, at least to me, it seems like having resources and knowing where to go and knowing who to help and having somebody who's familiar with body image and nutrition and, therapy and all those kinds of things as it relates to climbing, I think would be really helpful. And I think for a lot of people, it's hard for them to know where to go. Mm-hmm. So I think, I think there's only so much on a numbers, testing, whatever level that can be done. But I think it's really important that people know where to go when they realize they need help.
You feel like you would have taken, like, used those resources if they had been there for you?
I think every athlete's different, but I think I would have. Hmm. For sure.
And can I ask you about your relationship with food now?
Yeah, of course.
How do you feel about food and eating it?
I feel like I love eating food. I feel like I'm in a good place now where I it's still really important for me to eat healthy and not really drink alcohol that much and do things that fuel my performance and make me a better athlete and keep me in shape and keep me fit and healthy. But that's where the train stops. That's like sort of, you know, I understand that being healthy and eating healthy fuels you to be the best athlete you can be. And so, I mean, that's about as much as I think about it. I try to eat well every meal and have all my macronutrients in every all three of the meals that I eat. And yeah, I don't really regulate it much otherwise, I think. Yeah, I think if I focus on those things, then it's not, I don't have an issue.
Have you worked with a nutrition professional?
I have not. We've done like one-off clinics, I guess I would say, like with the national team. Like they've brought nutritionists in to talk to us about strategies of things and how, you know, macronutrients are broken down and things like that. But no, I've never had an actual specific nutritionist.
Well, whatever you're doing, it seems like it's working for you.
I have so far so good.
I wasn't saying that you should. I'm just curious, you know, how many professional athletes do seek that kind of help out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't be opposed to it even now, for sure. Like, I think it's interesting. It's a slippery slope. It's like not focusing on it. It is a tool for performance, for sure. Obviously it is, but yeah, it's tough.
Okay. Last question is about your training, which this is a training podcast and we've legitimately almost not talked about.
We've talked
about
the mind is training.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is kind of what I'm more interested in talking about these days, but generals, how many days a week do you train in general?
Right now I'm letting myself go by feel a little bit more than I have in past years. I usually just either do 2 days on and then rest, or 3 days on and then rest, depending on how that second session feels. Mm-hmm. And then that's just consistently what happens. Sometimes it's 3 days on, 1 day off for a while, and sometimes it's 2 days on, 1 day off for a while. But yeah.
Is it ever 2 days off?
For sure. Not often, I will say. For sure, not often. But sometimes I think my more common thing is to just do a single day on. It's like rest and then do 1 day and then rest again and then do day on, day off for a while until I, like if I'm feeling burnt out or tired, that's something I'll do. That's what I would like prefer to do rather than take 2 rest days back to back. But yeah, no, I do for sure.
And when you were working on Show Your Scars, for instance, what was your training schedule like then?
If I remember correctly, I would go and try the boulder 1 day. And then I would, I think, train the next day, fingerboard, maybe do some like, I've been doing dead points instead of campusing because I learned I'm not powerful enough to generate well when I campus. I just like wiggle up one arm like a fish and then reach up really fast. Mm-hmm. So Tyler Nelson told me I should just do straight up dead points instead. So I'll do like that kind of thing and hangboard the second day, and then I'll rest and then I would go up again. Alternatively, the day I did it, I was actually second day on. I went to the gym the day before and just did easy dead points and hangboarding hangs.
Oh, so you didn't even climb?
And didn't climb. And then the next day I went up and did the, which I've been liking more and more on hard boulders. Like not, it's not, I don't always feel my best first day on, like after having a full, really mellow rest day. So a lot of times I'll like do that full mellow, do nothing rest day. And then the next day I'll go to the gym and do some light mobility stuff and dead points and hangboarding. And then go to the project the next day.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're sort of activated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And are you doing a lot of weights stuff?
I did, like I said, I did a lot of weights when I was working with those coaches when I lived in Vancouver for a lot of years. What was it, 5 years? and not that weights last forever, but I think I created like a good overall body balance. And so I do conditioning and weights and stuff, but it's really like targeted. Like, so it's, I've been having issues with my knees, and I think I learned that it's because my legs are weak. So I have like a mini leg circuit, but it's super targeted at climbing. So it's not like big squats or things like that. Like, it's like hamstring curls and tib raises and like split squats and things like that, that are just specific to what I've learned is weak in my legs. Same thing with upper body stuff. It's either really small weights for like eccentric shoulder exercises, because I've learned that that's weak, or lock off exercises, or things that are like very specific to what I'm working on and what is holding me back in my general body strength, and less like I don't do my, as my old coach Jeff Thompson would say, my big dumb muscles much anymore.
Got it. And do you feel like you can stay away from injury that way?
I think so. I think that's sort of the focus, at least for me right now, in terms of strength training, is doing it enough to not get injured and make sure that I have sort of an overall strength balance, in terms of climbing, weight training, whatever. Because when I let that slide a little bit is when I notice my little injuries or whatever coming back pretty quickly.
Seems like you've got this down to a science.
I don't. I'm learning and changing it all the time. So if you have me on in 6 months, it might be completely different.
Okay. And what are you working on right now? Anything?
Well, AJ and I are going to Colorado for the month of July.
To the park?
To the park.
Nice. Jade?
I think we will try Jade.
Nice.
That's on the list for sure. So that should be cool. I haven't been to the park since, I think, 2015, and I was much weaker back then, so I'm excited to put all my new mental and physical abilities to the test.
Yeah, it'd be like a playground up there for you.
Yeah, so we actually have to, I gotta figure out that whole reservation thing. I have not, I've been dropping the ball on that, so that's actually a good reminder.
Good luck with that. Well, I won't take any more of your time. I really appreciate you being so candid with me and open and telling us all the things, so thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's always nice to be able to have a platform to share.
Yeah. All right, well, take care and good luck with all of your goals.
Thanks so much.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Allison Vest. You can find her on Instagram at Allison Vest, and it's A-L-L-I-S-O-N, and Vest is just how it sounds. You'll find all of her antics over there with her friend Kyra and all of her endeavors outside and inside. So coming up on the podcast, I have some pretty interesting things, actually. I hired a dog trainer for my crazy healer mix, Willa, and she is really good at her job and really passionate about it. And I'm actually going to interview her about dog training. It's a training podcast, after all. So we're going to talk about dog training for crag dogs. Because obviously it's an issue. It's interesting because I always, I don't know, I had a lot more judgment for people at the crag before I got this puppy, because our other dog was perfect. And I thought that I had trained her to be that way, but turns out she was just a perfect dog. And now I have this like barking mess. Which I work on constantly, but it's hard, you know, like training dogs is hard. And so we're going to talk about things that you can do to train your dog to be less bad at the crag. Okay. So that's coming up. And also remember that you can sign up to be on the wait list to get a discount on my new program with Coach Alex Steiger called Reach. And that program is an integrated approach to training for climbing, which includes climbing, drills, strength training, workouts, and nutrition. And it's a 4-week program starting August 8th to help you prepare for your fall projects. And so Alex and I will be doing the program with you. because we're both training to send in September or October, our mega projects, which you might have heard us talk about on the last episode. So you can find that at trainingbeta.com/reach. You can join the wait list and we'll hope to see you in there. So thanks so much for listening all the way to the end. You can find us at trainingbeta.com or at trainingbeta on Instagram. And I'll talk to you next week.